Welcome to Vega's World. It's time to party. I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm going to give you my review of the new 2025 Running Man, directed by Edgar Wright. And before we dive into that, let's talk a little bit about some movie and television news around the way, shall we? Starting off with the possible Ben Solo movie. Now, in late October with the Associated Press, Adam Driver said that he, along with Steven Soderbergh, came up with an idea, and they had a script written by Scott Z. Burns, and they got the big thumbs up from Kathleen Kennedy, who is the head of Lucasfilm, and they took it to Bob Iger and Alan Bergman, and they said no, and that was that. And they couldn't see how Ben Solo was alive. So, like, what's the point in making this movie? It sounds dumb. And fans, rightfully so. And I guess, you know, in the vigor that is a Star Wars fan, they were fucking pissed. Excuse the language, but that just shows how the emphasis there on how upset they were. It's gotten to the point where people have taken planes and flown them over the Disney Burbank headquarters, such as a plane with a banner that read, "Shareholders want the hunt for Ben Solo." And there have been flyers put around that street with, like, you know, it says missing. Have you seen this man? It's got Adam Driver as the character of Kylo Ren. They said that he's last been seen 5 years and 10 months ago on Exegol, you know, blah, 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 you know, information, the hunt for Ben Solo. And, like, fans want this movie and, you know, they're probably not going to get it. And it's kind of funny because, you know, The Rise of Skywalker was a disaster, both critically and audience wise. And it, you know, killed the Star Wars franchise for a couple of years now. I mean, next summer we got The Mandalorian and Grogu coming to theaters in the hopes of, like, maybe we could get the box office back, right? But, I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing. I mean, you brought back Emperor Palpatine, right? Like, why not just bring back Ben Solo or just ignore The Rise of Skywalker? Hell, ignore the whole new trilogy. But that is hilarious to me that fans want this so much that they're, like, you know, paying money to have planes fly over the studio to be like, hey, get this back to us, please. We want it. Give us the hunt for Ben Solo. Give us a Ben Solo movie, will ya? Also in some funny bit of news from an interview with Miles Teller on Sirius XM when he was talking to Andy Cohen on the Radio Andy radio show. He's had this to say about his time on the Fantastic Four. He said, "I think it's unfortunate because so many people worked so hard on that movie, and honestly, maybe there was one really important person who kind of fucked it all up. But especially as a younger actor at the time, it was like, if you want to be taken seriously as a leading man, you got to get on this superhero train. And that was our chance, and the casting I thought was spectacular. I loved all the actors, co-stars being Michael B. Jordan, Jamie Bell, Kate Mara, and Tim Blake Nelson." Miles had this to say further on in the interview. He was like, when I first saw the movie, I remember talking to one of the studio heads, and I was like, I think we're in trouble. And he didn't specify who this person was, but, you know, if you remember around that time and read anywhere online, you would probably know that it's probably, more than likely, hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, leaning towards Josh Trank, who was the director of this film. His previous hit, Chronicle, was, you know, a very smaller budget film, and that, like, kind of catapulted him to, I wouldn't say stardom, but it gave him the opportunity to get bigger projects, especially superhero films, because Chronicle was more or less a grounded superhero found footage movie. And, you know, at the time he was touting that he had a vision for this movie that would have been better than 99% of the comic movies ever made. And it was his vision was not fully realized. And, you know, there was some beef with him and Kate Mara. He didn't want her on the film. He didn't care and gave her, like, the shittiest of shitty direction. And, like, his behavior on that movie, you know, tanked any success or any chance of him getting a major motion picture after the fact. And, you know, it's just funny. It's interesting now. I mean, it's, you know, you kind of expect these kind of stories to come out now, considering, like, it's years later and, like, it's, you know, any NDAs or any contractual stipulations around the movie is, you know, waived at this point, or it's the expiration is well past its date, so he can freely speak about it. But he said it in a more professional manner anyway. But yeah, you know, it is what it is. That movie was not very good, and you could tell, like, ooh, boy, there was two different ideologies going in the movie. I mean, the body horror aspect of that Fantastic Four was kind of interesting. I was on board for it, but yeah, that was not a good movie. And I think Josh Trank hasn't really had a movie since then, and it's been smaller budget films after that fact. And, you know, we're gearing up for Stranger Things 5, the final season of the main show, but not the end of Stranger Things. Oh, no, 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 no. As has been said before, I think I've about other projects, when there's a hot property, the companies will squeeze every bit of juice they can out of it. And that's the case with Stranger Things, because in 2026, we will be seeing Stranger Things Tales from 85. It's going to be the bridge between season 2 and 3. It's going to be an animated feature, you know, entirely different cast, but it's going to follow the kids in between that time. And I mean, it could be fun, you know. I mean, if you're not going to, you know, if your thirst for Stranger Things hasn't been quenched in Stranger Things 5, you know, which is coming out November 26th, I'm looking forward to it. The first 4 episodes, at least, volume 2 will come out Christmas, the next 3 episodes, and then a finale will be dropped on New Year's Eve. And the teaser that's come up for Stranger Things 5, you know, with 11 doing like essentially an obstacle course and like doing her best superhero impression, and Tom Cruise like chopping wind running. You know, I mean, it could be interesting. I'm curious to see how they're going to wrap this all up, because I mean, I loved Stranger Things. I loved the first 3 seasons, at least. Season 4 left a lot to be desired in an aspect, because I didn't like the explanation of Vecna and his involvement in the Upside Down. It'll be interesting to see how they close this all out. I mean, good Lord, it's been how many years? We're finally getting the end of it, and it's only been 5 seasons. I mean, granted, there have been writer strikes, COVID happened, that delayed, you know, production on everything across the board for everybody around the world and just life in general. So, and like, you know, these kids, supposed to be like a couple months after the fact, and these kids are not even kids anymore. They're like full-grown adults in their 20s, and it's just, you know, it is what it is. But Stranger Things 85, you know, I'll watch it because I'm curious to see how, you know, the bridge between 2 and 3 and how they're going to explain that. I'm sure we'll probably get more of Max and Eleven developing their relationship, because, you know, if you remember season 2, Eleven didn't necessarily like Max because, you know, she felt like she was taking Will away from her, you know, being Eleven, you know, because she saw them being cool with each other in the gym. You know, she don't know a damn thing, but still, it'll be interesting. I hope that they don't go too crazy with like spinoffs of Stranger Things, like unless there's like a unique cool idea to be had and that would need exploration. But you never know with these things. I mean, fuck, they took Squid Games and actually made it a game show for people, and like completely missing the whole fucking point of what Squid Games was about. So I don't know, man. It's just going to be, it's going to be what it is, but I'm looking forward to it. I was going to rewatch the first couple of seasons just before the new one, but that's not in the cards for me, because I've been busy with other stuff. Life and wrestling and other projects have gotten in the way of that rewatch. So, and in surprising news to me, giving the big blunder that was the season finale of Alien Earth and the critical and fan negative reception of it, we have the announcement that FX and Disney Entertainment Television has given the green light for a season 2 of Alien Earth, and production is set to begin next year in London, and it's a multi-year deal. I can't speak for whatever reason today. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. It's a multi-year deal that is valued in the nine figures, and we'll see Holly broaden his scope to all of Disney Entertainment Television, which includes ABC and Hulu original shows. So I guess we're getting another season of that and some other projects from him. I mean, he's been at FX for years and years with Legion, Fargo, and other stuff like that. But the fact that we're getting, I, with where they left off in Alien Earth, it'll be interesting to see if they can right the ship, if they can course correct and make things a little bit more interesting and compelling, and that will fit in line with the beginning of Alien. I mean, the synth kids had promise at the beginning of the season, and you know, Morrow looked like he would be an interesting protagonist or antagonist rather, and it just fell flat to me. It just like it cratered to me. Like, it just, all the goodwill that they had leading up to the finale just fucking tanked in that last episode and just made everything just like, what the fuck? So, it's surprising that it took this long to get this deal done, but I guess considering the money and what other aspects he wants to do, you know, between Fargo and other stuff, probably a little bit of time, but it was, you know, it was interesting the fact that, like, it took a while for this to get greenlit, because like as soon as the show ended, it was like, I mean, it's been months since that show, you know, finished its first season, and it left on a cliffhanger. And you know what? If they would have left it at that, that'd have been fine with me. Like, it had been one of those things we just don't need to resolve, like the Prometheus and David storyline. I hope we never touch that. And like Ridley Scott had talked about, well, we're going to do a third one. No, you better not. Disney, if you know what's good for you, just don't let him do it. Just get him away from the goddamn thing. Let Fede Alvarez take care of everything. You know, give it to Dan Trachtenberg. Let him meld the two together, and let's just keep this thing going full bore. But yeah, so like it's been greenlit for a second season. It sounds like they're getting a third one on top of it too, with the way the deal is structured. And we'll see what goes from there. I mean, I liked Legion. Fargo has been critically acclaimed, but I don't know, bro. That Alien Earth just, I've said it already. It's just not a whole lot there. But anyway, let's talk about The Running Man. Now, for all those of you who may know, of course you know, back in the late 80s, it was a Arnold Schwarzenegger vehicle, and this version is very different from that version, where it was a game show centered in one night and like a bunch of hunters who were like equivalent to pro wrestling caricatures. I mean, Jesse Ventura was in it. This story shows a down on his luck Ben Richards. He's a family man. He's not a big old hulking brute like Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's not a cop. He's just an everyday Joe who's gotten fired from every job he's had due to insubordination. And he's got a lot of anger towards the system and how it's structured. His baby is very sick and she needs medicine. And he feels like he's going to have to get on one of these game shows, not The Running Man itself, but one of these other game shows to make some fast cash in order to pay for his daughter's medicine and to help his family out of a little bind. But Dane Killian, the producer, played by Josh Brolin, sees some potential in his insubordination and his anti-establishment ways, and propositions him to join The Running Man because he sees star's potential in him. He doesn't see him as a threat. He sees him as a star in the making, and the money just too good to be true or too good to turn down. So he ends up inevitably finding himself in The Running Man. And to this, I say, from the opening minutes, it's breakneck speed. You know, it starts out, you know, we see Ben Richards, we see the kind of man he is, and, you know, his family life. We get that in order to root for the man and see him succeed in this. And the action and pace of it from the get-go is tremendous. Like, there ain't no breaks. And I have not read the Richard Bachman, aka the pseudonym for Stephen King, for those of you who may know. I've not read the Stephen King Running Man novel, but as what I can gather from supplemental readings, I say supplemental being reviews and interviews and such, while it is not a one-to-one adaption per se, it lifts a lot from it. Obviously, it kind of dabbles and takes the bleakness that was set in that Running Man world in the novels. The ending, however, I was spoiled on that as far as the book goes. It's not that in this film. I don't think any studio is going to ever go that bleak. I mean, you'd have to have somebody with some serious cojones, and I don't know of anybody who would, you know, take that risk, especially for that. But, like, you know, they got a little bit of that, and it's got a bit of Edgar Wright's trademark offbeat humor, and especially in, like, heightened action situations. Like, but it doesn't feel necessarily like an Edgar Wright movie. Like, all the cleverness and inventiveness that you would see in a Scott Pilgrim versus the World or a Baby Driver is not really here. This feels more like a more safe approach, and maybe it hits the case because, I mean, he did Last Night in Soho, and, like, a lot of people felt like this was his way to redeem himself as a director in this front. I mean, it's still got, like, a bit of his trademark style, like, especially in the scene when, I don't want to spoil it, but, like, when Michael Cera shows up, it's got a little bit more of his offbeat, off-kiltered humor, and that, like, his breakneck style, and that, like, that was fun. Colin Domingo is fantastic as the host, Bobby T, in this movie. Like, he chews the scenery as, like, a game show host would. And Josh Brolin is, again, fantastic as the smarmy producer. They are fantastic as, like, you know, the supplemental roles in this film. And even Michael Cera. Michael Cera, I think, is probably another big shining spot in this. Like, homeboy brought his A-game for his part in it. I mean, everybody. I mean, shit. William H. Macy did a fantastic job in this film. But those are good, but, like, it still doesn't lift the project up. It is more faithful to the novel than the original movie, because, again, the original movie set, you know, the only one night game show, and, like, he's a cop instead of just a everyday down on his luck Joe. But yeah, I mean, something just feels lacking in this film. I don't know. I can't exactly put my finger on it. Like, it's not to say that you're not going to be entertained. You're going to get your thrills for sure. Like, the action is competent enough. Trust me. Like, you will not be bored in this film. You will be thoroughly entertained. Like, cause it's still got some decent parts in it, but the satire and the commentary, like, about, you know, poverty and corporations controlling everything, like, you're not going to get a whole lot of that. I mean, it's there, but it's not, like, it's surface level. It doesn't have a whole lot of teeth to it. But, I mean, it's still competently made. It's still a fun ride. It's just, you know, like, the creativeness that you would see in, like, Baby Driver, or, like, the action scenes in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and how, like, the humor and the action, and it's all cleverly woven and visually. I mean, it's more, you could tell it's an Edgar Wright film, and you get a little bit of that in here, but I still feel it's more safe studio movie, and that's kind of surprising coming from Edgar Wright, considering the stuff he's made, like, you know, Hot Fuzz, his portion in Grindhouse, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, The World's End, and Baby Driver, like, stuff like that. Like, I don't know. And Glenn Powell is good as Ben Richards. You know, he makes him more of the everyday man, the guy you would root for. Like, he's still muscular, don't get me wrong, but he's not, like, the hulking brute that Schwarzenegger was in his day and age. But I think you're going to enjoy this film if you sit down and watch it. Like, if you're expecting the Running Man, the goofy, you know, big overblown hunters that you saw in the 87 version, you're not going to get that here. You're not going to get, you get a little bit of goof. I mean, there's humor there, but you're not going to get the one-liners and stuff. Like, it's very different from this. And, you know, it's kudos to Edgar Wright, I will say, for sticking as close to Richard Bachman. I'm going to call him Richard Bachman because that's the name of the book. It was the author's name of the book. I know it's Stephen King, but I'm just going to be that indie hipster guy who refers to him by his indie name if he's a wrestler. Only wrestlers will get that joke, or wrestling fans, so bear with me on that one. But anyway, you know, I covered that. That's as much as I could say about it without getting too spoilery on it. I don't want to spoil it for anybody. But, you know, again, it's not a bad movie by any stretch of the imagination. It's just not what I expect or would expect Edgar Wright to turn out. I feel like most cases he zigs when I feel like he's going to zag. Like he's in other films, he subverts expectations and does something surprising that's enjoyable. And this, it just feels more safe than anything. But it's still got a little bit of his trademark humor, his style, his fast-paced edit and styling, you know, with how he positions the camera and such. But the latter half of the movie, it just feels rushed, and it feels like we not earned in a way. And I don't know how to feel about the ending. The ending we did get in this one. It doesn't feel necessarily earned, and it feels too neat for what this story is supposed to be, like this dystopian, like bleak vision that Stephen King had put in the Running Man universe in his story in that version. And it's definitely bleak at the beginning, like when it shows all the game shows and how people are doing all this crazy shit just to like make a few bucks. That could cost them like their like health and all that. Even the Running Man, but like you're not gonna get like the hunters in this. You're not gonna get super over the top like caricatures you got in the other one. They're not like 80s style wrestlers in this. It's fair. They're more subdued in that, but still, you know, again, the action's fun. But yeah, just I'll give it a 3 out of 5 if I'm gonna give it a rating. That'd be what I give this movie for sure. Like you're gonna enjoy it. Like it's gonna be the popcorn flick you would expect. But it's not gonna be. I don't think it's gonna be as revered as his other works have been in the past, like Hot Fuzz or Scott Pilgrim versus the World, and talked about in that sense. It's still fun, and it could be a fun B-side to the other Running Man. It'll be fun comparisons, and all that. So, you know, you'll enjoy this film. You'll get your money's worth in a sense, but don't expect anything grandular or, you know, typical trademark of Edgar Wright in that sense where everything's like, wow, that was super impressive. It's fun. So, moving on from that, Death Stranding, the animated series from Hideo Kojima is found itself a streaming home, and it's the most bizarre places for a streaming home, if I do say so myself. It's gonna be on Disney Plus. Now, you know, when I think Death Stranding, I don't think Disney Plus. I mean, I haven't played the game myself. My eldest nephew, Jace, who's been on the show, go listen to the Nosferatu episode. It's on YouTube as well for a quick fix flat. But listen to this first and then go listen to that. You know, he's played it. He enjoyed it. He gave me a little bit about it, about what, you know, what's up with the series. And that's fun. And, you know, I like Norman Reedus. And I know how it started from a Resident Hill game, like PT. And then when, like, Hideo Kojima couldn't come to an agreement with Konami, he, you know, deuced out, and him and Norman Reedus developed, or he used Norman Reedus to develop Death Stranding. So, but the working title for this television series is called Death Stranding Isolations, and it's going to be on Disney Plus in 2027. Again, I am so thrown off by Disney Plus getting this. I know, like, in the next year, they're going to blend Hulu with Disney Plus, and like there's been adult oriented shows on Disney Plus like Daredevil and the Defenders saga and like all that stuff, and like Alien Earth is on there. But it's just still, it blows my mind to think of that. And like Death Stranding and like that. It's kind of more adult and just out of the box. Just, I can't fathom that being on freaking Disney Plus. It's just, it's wild. So that's cool for them. And a part of this show will be, the show's director will be Takayuki Sano, who has done Bullet Bullet and the Gridman universe. I loved SSS Gridman. That was a fun show. So I know he's done some pretty cool shit. So I know he'll bring his A game for this. I'll watch it. I gotta play the games probably though. Maybe I'll have to watch a short summary video on YouTube to catch up or like get more of the inner workings, because I don't know if I'll have time to play the gazillion hours of both games. I think there's two games out, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong. That's more than likely to happen, but still, like, it's just wild, man. It's wild that this is going to Disney Plus. But anyway, Ilya Kushnanov, bless me, who served as the character designer for Ghost in the Shell SAC 2047, has done some art for this. And speaking through a translator, Kojima has said that the series will be pretty mind-blowing and that he wanted to expand his franchise into anime as was that allow him to do things you can only do in animation. He added that the series will have new and different characters. And when asked why he's working with Disney on this, Kojima has said he has been a longtime fan of the company and worked with them on the 2023 documentary Hideo Kojima, Connecting Worlds. He added that Disney approached him about the project. All right, that blows my mind. They approached him about the project while working on the doc together. As for his motivations for making the series, Kojima said he realized that there are people who may not play video games, like me. Me being JC Vega, not Hideo. It would be funny if Hideo Kojima like never played his games. I don't even know what's going on in the games. I just make them. Anyway, he wanted to share the world with Death Stranding with more people. And the series will also utilize traditional hand-drawn 2D animation style with the E&H production, who have done Ninja Kamiyoi. Words are hard, ladies and gentlemen. Ninja K-A-M-U-I Kamiyoi. Yeah, we'll go with that. And Red Cat Ramen. I know how to say that for sure. There have been the projects that E&H are pretty well known for and they're currently working on. Disney Plus has also provided a brief outline for the series set in the world of Death Stranding Isolation's working title. Doesn't know if it's going to be that. We'll tell a completely new story separate from the video games. The upcoming series will follow a young man and woman as they set out on a new adventure. So that'll be interesting. And Kojima's an interesting cat, man. I know he's got he's an Easter egg in Cyberpunk 2047. I think it's 2047, but I played the games. God, words are hard, ladies and gentlemen. But yeah, like he was in that, so that was cool. And yeah, looking forward to it. It's probably gonna be trippy knowing Hideo Kojima, because he does some pretty off the wall stuff. And for all you Game of Thrones fans, you'll be happy to know that HBO has renewed The Knight of the Seven Kingdoms and House of the Dragon ahead of their 2026 premieres. The House of the Dragon will get a fourth season, and the Knights of the Seven Kingdoms will return for its second season. It's based, now the Knights of the Seven Kingdoms is based off the novella from George R. R. Martin, Dunk and Egg. And I don't know anything about that. I don't remember those characters. I don't even know if they appeared in the actual show. There's been a lot of stuff that's happened in that series and a lot of things that happened since then. And, like, let's be honest, Game of Thrones pretty much fell out of the cultural zeitgeist for a while. I know a lot of people like House of Dragon. And from what I saw of the first season, because it's been a while since I've watched other things, and other things have occupied my time. But it's, before I saw it, it's been fantastic, and that's cool that they're keeping it going. And hopefully all this will redeem the sour taste that the last season of the Game of Thrones proper, you know, left. Because that, man, what a blunder that was, man. Like, I was looking so forward to it. They they gave us like what, 5 or 6 seasons worth of quality television. Like everybody and their mother was talking about it. The most bootlegged television show out there. And then like that last season just cratered it for a while. I mean, you know, House of the Dragon did a lot to rebuild, I guess, you know, fan base and trust from them. I mean, that's on their fourth season. It's getting a fourth season now. So, you know, I mean, good for them. But you know what? Don't let this distract you from the fact that we're never going to get the end of the novel series, A Song of Ice and Fire. Like, Winds of Winter will not ever happen. Unless of course, he finished it and just, like, is trolling everybody and it's going to be released after he's dead or he's given the notes to somebody else to finish as a ghostwriter. I have no fucking idea. I mean, I haven't read the books, but, like, everyone's been wanting him to do this and he's been doing other projects and whatnot. Who knows, man? Who knows? But yeah, good for those fans of Game of Thrones. Eventually, I will catch up on House of the Dragon. I think I got to the part, you know, spoilers for anybody who hasn't watched. I think I got to the wedding. And you know, if you know anything, but I mean, even if you haven't seen it, if you know anything about Game of Thrones and weddings, shit ain't gonna turn out all that good. I'll tell you that. And in some news that I'm sure all of you were waiting with bated breath for, Baywatch has found not only its streaming home or its television home in Fox. It's going to be 12 episodes for the season. It's going to be coming out in September, but also the fact that the television show will be filmed in Los Angeles, California, where it originally shot all those years ago. Except towards the end when they moved production to Hawaii because, you know, tax incentives are a thing of beauty to these execs. But with this new, you know, this reboot coming along, they have managed to, you know, get some incentives to come shoot. And it's going to be $21 million worth. And Baywatch will get a credit equal to 40% of its qualified expenses, the maximum allowed under the law, because it is considered a relocating show. This is because the upcoming reboot has been described as a series, season 12, and even though it is not filmed in Hawaii since a reunion TV movie in 2002, it is considered a part of the whole show. So that means that possibly we could see people like Carmen Electra come back. And, you know, Carmen Electra said, I'd be happy to work. Of course, yeah. What the fuck has Carmen Electra been doing these past fucking, like, 20 years or whatever it is, like, besides, like, I guess Scary Movie. I think she was in the Blue Mountain State or whatever the fuck that show was. I mean, sorry, Richardson, I know you're on that show. You're awesome as Jack Reacher, but I'm sorry, I just never got around to watching it. But yeah, you know, she wants to come back as Lonnie McKenzie. She says, I could do the slow motion run. I can definitely do that. And I still look really good in that suit, so that's no problem. Yeah, give this woman a payday. Yeah, let her sit in the background as like a grandma. Could you imagine, bro? They bring her back and she's like a grandma of like some newbie lifeguard. Maybe David Hasselhoff will come back. Maybe they'll give David Hasselhoff a bit part that'll spin off into Baywatch Nights Part 2, Electric Boogaloo. And this time, he has solved the murder of a sous chef. And the president of the United States is being taken over by aliens. I don't fucking know, because, you know, Baywatch Nights got fucking bizarre. But, you know, whatever, man. I'm curious to see how they deal with this. Considering this series... as a series, season 12, and I guess not technically a whole reboot necessarily. It's a relaunch, whatever you want to fucking call it. I don't care. it's just, I wonder if they'll continue like some of the crazy storylines. Like, hey, let's have wrestlers show up and wrestle for a youth center. And by the way, this woman's got cancer. That's the only episode I remember from that show. Or maybe we'll have, you know, Shawn Michaels return as some other guy's thug, who knows. But yeah, good for Baywatch, I guess, and good for those fans who have been waiting with bated breath since the 90s for the return of Baywatch to the television screens. But you can also watch it on Prime in high def with surprisingly most of the music still intact for those of you who care about that shit. And in the final bit of news, one of the big talking points for Daredevil Season 2 involves the exclusion of Frank Castle. That's right. The Punisher will not be a character in Season 2. And they've said he'll still be an integral part of the MCU and other projects. However, he will not be a part of this, which, I mean, that could be a misstep, you know. But then again, it's a Daredevil show. I mean, I think Punisher show pops up for quite a bit. And I know he was in Season 2. I think he shows up in Season 3 of Daredevil, I'm not mistaken. I think so. Can't remember. I haven't watched it in a long-ass time. I don't think I even finished, to be honest with you. Whoops. Not very good of me right there, brother. I'm going back and rewatching it, so don't kill me. I just finished. It's been a little while. I finished Season 1, and I'm getting back. I'm watching The Defenders in order. But nonetheless, this story, Frank Castle, John Barenthal, not in this. And I mean, it could be, it's a little tricky. Maybe it's a bait and switch. Maybe they're lying to us. Because I feel like he could have definitely been a good, interesting part, considering the fact that Wilson Fisk is the fucking mayor of New York City. And they kind of tapped into him, you know, being against the guys who are like, we're big fans of yours. And he's like, you guys are fucking pussies, amateurs. You're not me. You can't be me. You're wusses. You know, a lot of stuff. It could have been interesting to see him, you know, fight his tyrannical reign and who Wilson Fisk is and kind of help expose that. But we know Kristen Ritter, who is Jessica Jones, is going to pop up in Season 2. And the actress accidentally leaked that the season's trailer, which was shown at New York Comic Con, and you know, her debut in the MCU proper, so that's pretty cool too. But you know, also Bullseye's coming back in Season 3, which he, you know, let out of the bag. So he was like, oops, sorry. But you know, I know John Barenthal, it's Punisher, is getting like a one-off, like 1 hour long special, and he's supposed to be in Brand New Day. That's going to be interesting to see Frank Castle in a PG-13 environment. I'm sure he could pull it off. I mean, I don't know how dark they're going to get in that show, but, you know, it'll be fun. But, you know, who's to say? Who's to say what's going to happen? I mean, we still have no real details on the special presentation, as they're calling it, for the Punisher thing. There's not a whole lot of plot or supporting characters released, but it's supposed to be coming out in 2026. And, yeah, I mean, it's going to suck to not have him in the show. But, again, it's the Daredevil show. It's not, you know, Daredevil featuring John Barenthal as, you know, Frank Castle. Though their relationship is pretty compelling. But I feel like we've done that enough, and especially in his little part. You know, what about Foggy? Did he get life and all that shit? And even in the original Netflix series. So, you know, I mean, is it a true loss? Not necessarily, but it'll be interesting to see where they take the Daredevil character and what elements they do. Another interesting quote that I saw not too long ago, the showrunner said that Marvel has given them the green light to do whatever the hell they wanted in the next two seasons. So you had my curiosity, but now you have my attention. And does that mean necessarily that, like, Daredevil is not going to be featured in other MCU projects? It's going to be like they're in the MCU, but like they're going to be off again in their own little world, kind of like how they were in Netflix. I mean, not necessarily, I don't know, but like how far are they going to let them actually go, really? That's the one thing I'm curious about and interested in finding out. How dark are they going to let Daredevil go? I mean, we got a pretty decent amount of that original feel in, you know, Born Again Season 1. So it'll be, you know, a time will tell. Time will tell, and you will hear my review. But all I know is that it is
a beautiful abyss. Greatest abyss you've ever seen.
Yes, a beautiful abyss. Especially the Running Man, if you live in that universe. But, you know, hey, that's all the news and stuff I have for you this week. I hope you enjoyed listening to the show. I'm feeling very, very energetic today. I don't know what it is. I feel more lively than normal, a little bit more upbeat. But yeah, you know, what? That's neither here nor there. But anyway, you can find the show, Vegas World Pod, on Blue Sky, Twitter, Instagram. Go to the YouTube channel. like and subscribe there. Follow me. I keep saying, but I'm going to have some new videos up in the very near future. Holidays and wrestling and stuff has kind of, you know, delayed some of the other projects that I had, but more of that is coming. Go there, like and five star this podcast on Spotify and other places. Help grow that. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com. Get yourself a Vegas World t-shirt. Get yourself a JC Vega t-shirt. One says Punk Rock. The other says Rainbow Dash. And you can follow me at the JC Vega on all the social media platforms. You can even email the show, VegasWorldPodcast@gmail.com. Give us some recommendations on what we should cover in the future. So, you know, reviews on what you thought about previous episodes, all that fun stuff. Any negativity, though, will be quickly discarded and ignored. But, you know, hey, let's keep it positive, though. But, yeah, give us some recommendations. Leave comments on the Spotify, you know, portion of this of these episodes. But anyway, I'm JC Vega. Good night and party on.